Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, October 17th, 2010. This is episode 710. Enjoy. Well, a good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, and it's time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, and all that stuff. What do you want to talk about? This is your chance. 8888 Ask Leo's my number. I'll talk about gardening, home improvement, real estate. That's how I got started doing computers, you know. I was a regular talk show host, you know, a normal news talk show host. Who was secretly kind of in love with computers and technology, but I didn't tell anybody. It was kind of like my hobby. And we'd talk about the latest, you know, that was what, 89, 90. I don't know what we were talking about. It's funny how important these stories are when they're going on. And now I don't even remember anymore. And then they said, well, Leo, you know, there's this guy named Rush Limbaugh. He's much better than you. He's an up-and-comer. So we're canceling your talk show, and we're going to put Rush in there, which turned out to be the best decision that station ever made. But we're going to let you do the weekends. You're going to be the king of home improvement, and which I did with the Carey Brothers. And you're going to be the king of wine, which I did with Anthony Dias Blue. And you're going to be the king of real estate, which I did with a guy named Ray Brown. And so I did 9 hours a day on Saturday and Sunday doing specialty talk radio. And I said one thing. I said, please. Please, I have a thing that I like to do. It's called computers. It's an amazing concept. And I was wondering if maybe along with, you know, doing the show on how to fix your cracks in your basement, I could do a show about Windows 3.0, because that's what it was, Windows 3.0 and DOS 5. And they said, well, no one's going to want to. Forget that. Nobody be interested in that. That's foreign language programming. We don't want to do that. I said, please. They just give me 1 hour at the end of the 9 hours. They said, okay. And a fellow who was a computer columnist at the time, John C. Dvorak, and I did that. It must have been 91. 90 or 91. And, of course, that guy, Rush Limbaugh, he went on to fame and fortune. I went on to obscurity talking about computers for the last 20 years. But I'm enjoying it, and I'm still doing it. And I'm doing it right now. This is episode 710 of the Tech Guy Show. Not my 710th show. I think I'm about three or four times more than that because we only started counting this particular Tech Guy episodes. We only started counting in 2004. So since 2004, Tech Guy Show, 710 episodes in a continuing saga, a continuing attempt to figure out what all this stuff means, what it does, how it works. And how you can use it without tearing your hair out. 8888 Ask Leo is the number if you want to call in and share my pain. I'll share your pain if you'll share mine. It's frustrating. But, you know, we can also share our joy because this stuff is pretty cool and is changing our lives. 8888 Ask Leo. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. of A. You'll say hi to Gina Salvati. She's on the phones today. Oh, Jason on the phones today. That was Luis Oliveira. He's on the board, and he's keeping track of who's who. You know, Jason doesn't look a bit like Gina. I don't know why I was confused. Jason on the phone. And he'll say hi, and you get on the air, and we'll talk. If you're outside the U.S., now that's toll-free in the U.S., 888-827-5536, toll-free in the U.S., but if you're outside the U.S., you can use the same number, but you can't call it with a phone. You have to use Skype out. But that's free still. Skype out. 8888 Ask Leo, 888-827-5536. This was the week Microsoft finally took the wraps off Windows Phone 7. Not Windows 7 Phone. See, I say that all the time because they got Windows 7, but this isn't Windows 7 Phone. This is Windows Phone 7. because the last Windows Mobile was 6.5. So it's very confusing. But it's also very cool looking. It'll be available on AT&T November 8th. The Samsung Focus. And that's the one everybody seems to think is this. It's the lightest, the thinnest, the best screen, a 4-inch Super AMOLED screen from Samsung. Everybody's loving this phone. I've already got it on pre-order. I'm excited. So AT&T will have that $200 with a 2-year contract. They'll have some other phones, too. They're going to have an LG phone and what's the other one? I can't. They have 3 phones at AT&T. And then T-Mobile's going to have a couple of phones, too. They're going to have a Dell phone and they're going to have an HTC phone with the biggest screen of all beyond T-Mobile. That's a 4.3-inch. But everybody seems to agree the Super AMOLED 4-inch, that's the one you want. So that's the one I pre-ordered. That'll be out November 8th. Later for the other models, sometime in the month of November. And everybody's wondering, well, can Microsoft compete with iPhone? Can they compete even with Android phones? This is a very exciting market. This is where all the excitement's happening right now. Apple is not standing still by any means. They have some sort of press conference on Wednesday. I'm once again not invited. I don't care. Who cares? I'll watch from afar, and we'll see what they do. My suspicion is, given the invitation, which they invited my colleague Andy Yannacco, who lives in Boston. They invited him. I live just up the road, but they didn't invite me. I guess they don't count whether it's you got to come a long way. And I don't know if Andy's coming out. He might. We will cover it, of course, on my podcast network, and I'll talk about it next week. But if you look at the invitation, it's an Apple logo, and then peering out from behind it is what appears to be a lion, a big cat of some sort. Now, you know that Apple names all its operating systems after big cats, Lynx, Puma, Cheetah, Tiger, Leopard, Snow Leopard. So it makes sense that the next one, they haven't used lion, and there are not a lot of big cats left. We were kind of hoping for Meerkat. I don't even know if that is a cat, but they're going to, that makes sense. They call it Lion. OS 10, 10.7 is what I would guess it'd be. So, and this isn't a big announcement because they're having it on campus. They'll have punch and cookies and, a couple hundred people will be there and they'll say, well, we're going to do a new, but the question is are they going to do anything else? And anytime Apple has an event, all the press goes crazy. My friend Becky Worley, who's great, she works at Good Morning America, and she just wrote this morning. She tweeted, "Oh, this is exciting! I see reduced prices on Apple laptops. Must mean they're going to announce laptops." But then I said, "Well, no, Becky. They always have. That's the refurbs. They do that all the time. That doesn't mean new laptops. I don't know if we'll see new laptops or even they just updated the laptops. Maybe. Here's okay. You want to know the wildest speculation of what Apple could do on Wednesday? And then I'm going to drop it because who knows? And we'll find out. The wildest speculation would be, yes, they're going to announce a new version of the operating system. There's got to be something cool in it. Otherwise, why even do a new version? Operating systems have kind of leveled off, haven't they? They do everything we want. So there's got to be something cool and new in it. So here's the wildest speculation. The tablet and the iPhone are the biggest successes right now in Apple's product list. What if they put multi-touch, the touch that you see with the pinch and the zoom, what if they built that into the operating system, and they put out a new touch laptop, maybe a MacBook Air with a touch screen? I know I'd be interested in that because now that I use the iPad and the iPhone so much, I keep touching my laptop screen as if it's going to do something, and it doesn't. So maybe that's what, maybe we'll see. If you go all the way from ho-hum, they're going to say, yeah, we're going to have Lion out in about 6 months, and here's some features, too. One more thing. The one more thing may be a MacBook Air with a touchscreen. That's it. Or do you have an idea? 8888 Ask Leo. Maybe you can think of something that Apple could do that would change the world. And they may be able to do it Wednesday. Have you been following the Cablevision Fox ruckus in New Jersey and Long Island and Connecticut? Cablevision is a small cable provider, but I think a very forward-looking cable provider. And this has happened before. They've been in a fight with other networks. What happens is that, maybe you don't know this, but HBO and CNN and all the cable channels, they pay the cable company, Comcast or Time Warner or Cablevision, they pay them per subscriber. And apparently Fox is asking for more money per subscriber. And Cablevision says no. And the negotiations broke down. The contract ran out, So people with cable vision in New Jersey, Connecticut, and Long Island suddenly couldn't get Channel 5. They couldn't watch the ball game last night. They won't be able to watch the New York Giants game today. And worse, I don't. We're going to have to investigate what happened here. But apparently, briefly, Cablevision retaliated by blocking Fox's Hulu service to their cable modem customers. It seems like they said, well, we'll punish them. This is the release from Hulu. Unfortunately, we were put in a position of, Hulu blocked, I'm confused. Hulu blocked Cablevision? Maybe that's what happened. According to All Things Digital, quote, this is a quote from Hulu public relations rep, Elisa Schreiber. Unfortunately, we were put in a position of needing to block Fox content on Hulu in order to remain neutral during, So you could have watched Fox stuff even though on the web, right? Even though it was being blocked on the cable TV, in order to remain neutral during contract negotiations between Fox and Cablevision. This only includes Fox content. All other Hulu content is accessible on Cablevision. We regret to impact Cablevision customers. Look forward to returning Fox content. So I see what happened. Hulu decided, we're going to pull Fox content from Hulu. This is ugly. But see, that was kind of a loophole, wasn't it? So, I don't get Channel 5, but I could still watch it on the internet. So they decided, we're not going to let you watch it on the internet. How can we just move along and just say, cable companies, it's over. Thank you very much. You are now bandwidth providers. We just need high-speed internet. We'll handle it from here. We'll just get the shows we want from the content providers themselves. We'll go a la carte. We'll listen to just what we want. We'll pay for just what we want. You've done a nice job. We'll see you later. Can we just please say that? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's go to your calls right after this. Tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. We had a caller yesterday who was hooking up his TV set. He had a big screen TV set to his computer. He wanted to watch TV from the computer. You know, that's, I think a lot of people are doing that. Home theater PC, they call it HTPC. And he had the computer had DVI connector, that digital video connector. And you can get an inexpensive device that turns that into HDMI. So he had that plugged into the screen. That worked fine. The problem is you're not getting audio because you're only getting the DVI out. So even though HDMI will carry audio, you're only getting video. So he's got to get the audio out of the computer. And what he was doing was just a little mini jack into the computer sound card plugged into the TV. So it was analog audio out of the computer into the television. And he says, now, the nice thing about doing this is he can see his computer screen. So he can have a keyboard and a mouse, wireless keyboard and mouse, and he can surf. So he said, but every time I open my browser, I hear this whine, this high-pitched coming out of the TV. And I said, yeah, that's probably radio frequency interference coming out of the laptop or whatever he's using, the desktop, out of the sound card. Because if you think about it, your computer, you've got this processor in here, this 3 gigahertz processor. I mean, it's broadcasting. That thing is, that's on radio frequencies practically. That's an FM frequency. Isn't 2.4 megahertz an FM frequency? Anyway, it's broadcasting in a multiple of an FM frequency. And so there's a lot of noise. So I suggested he get a device that would take USB out of the computer. So just take the bits out of the computer and then convert it to analog later. And lo and behold, I happen to have one. It's so funny because like an hour later, I opened a box, and there it was. And this is a high-end audiophile device, but it seems like a very good choice for somebody who wants to do exactly that. It's called the HRT Music Streamer 2. It's a little price. It's $150, but what you're paying for is the digital-to-analog converter. which is, in other words, by buying an expensive external device, you're doing two things. First, you're getting the audio conversion away from the noisy computer, but also you're using a better DAC, digital analog converter, than the cheap one on your sound card. And this HRT, we actually been playing with this a little bit. Did you try it, John? Did it sound good? Yeah. So I wanted to just kind of follow up on yesterday's show and tell our caller, I hope he's listening today, HRT Music Streamer 2. You can get it at Amazon. It's about $150. It's a D to A converter. It takes the USB audio from your computer and turns it into analog audio away from your computer with a much higher quality stream. They have a $150 device, and I think they also have a $250 device, depending on the quality you want. But $150 probably is enough. And you can get cheaper ones. You can get $31 ones, things like that. I'm not sure I'd recommend them, but you can get them for less. But the idea, you know, the cheaper ones won't give you an improved DAC, but they will get it away from the computer. That's kind of what you want to do. That's the first step. Michael in Des Moines, thanks for letting me follow up on that call, Michael. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo.
Hey, Michael. Nice to talk to you. What can I do for you today?
Well, where I work at, apparently the IT department, in their infinite wisdom, realized I didn't work there, and so they deleted my email account and the whole works. And so when they got it all back, I lost all my email and my calendar, and I can't get that back. But I was wanting to.
I got a guy here who works in IT for Quiznos, and he's shaking his head. That wasn't a good move on their part, was it? They deleted your account entirely.
Yeah, it was completely. I could not even log in on my work computer no more.
And then so you call them and they say, "Oops." And they create a new account. Instead of restoring your old account, they created a new account for you, which has none of your email, none of your calendar, anything.
Yeah, I lost everything for about 3 years.
Now, they were presumably using Exchange, Microsoft Exchange, I would guess. Do you know?
It was Outlook 2007.
Yeah, so I'm sure that their server was Exchange. Eric might know this. He's sitting right here. Do you guys use Exchange? If they delete an Exchange account, there must be somewhere they can restore that account from, right? In their backups or something. He's saying, yeah. What you got to do is, you can't, by the way, you can't do it. You don't have any access to it, Michael.
Yeah.
You got to go back to the IT department and say, dudes, that's 3 years of data you lost. Now, Dan, who also is in our chat room, he's our chat mod, and he also works with Exchange. He says it's not all that easy. He says 2002 R2 Active Directory accounts go into a recycle bin. So if they have the most recent version of Exchange, there is a recycle bin. And if they haven't emptied that yet, just like on your desktop, they might be able to just drag it out of the recycle bin. He says before that, earlier versions, which most people are still using, that's you know, most people don't upgrade the Exchange very fast. He says it's not going to be that easy, but you've got to talk them into it. I would suggest chocolates. Right? Eric says a big Quiznos sub would work as well. It's toasted, you know. Or chocolates. Or both. And maybe a bottle of wine. In other words, there's nothing you can do, Michael. You have to get them to do it. So now for future reference.
Leo.
Are you watching? Hey. Yeah. For future reference. You can back up even your corporate data. You know, you can export out of Outlook all of your stuff, and that's not a bad idea. You wouldn't think with an IT department and people doing this professionally, you'd have to worry about that. But maybe if you've got 3 years of data, this is a warning call to all of us. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy is brought to you by my good friends at DSL Extreme. They're my internet service provider. I'll be yours, too, for high-speed internet at an amazingly low price. Call 866, the number 2, GetNet, to get DSL Extreme. Scott Wilkinson is here. He's the editor-in-chief of the Ultimate AV Magazine at ultimateavmag.com. He's also a columnist for Home Theater Magazine at hometheatermag.com and an expert on audio and surround sound and big screen TVs, and he joins us every week to talk home theater. Hey, Scott. Uh-oh. Why can't I hear you, Scott? We should have checked this beforehand. I don't have any audio from you, Scott. It's not me. Let me push a button again. You're going to have to check your audio. We'll get another caller in while Scott's working on that, and as soon as I hear you, Scott, we'll go back to you. Meanwhile, it looks like San Proser from Wales. Is that right?
Hi, Leo.
Hey, what's your name?
I'm Sam Proser.
Sam Proser. And from Wales, England? No, that's Wales. You
the country.
Yeah, the country of Wales.
Yeah.
Welcome. Good to talk to you.
Hi. Hey, thank you.
What can I do for you today?
My contacts due up on my cell provider, and I'm looking for an Android phone. I'm just not quite sure what one to get yet.
Which sir, are you O2? Who do you use?
I'm on T-Mobile.
T-Mobile. And you don't mind moving to another provider, or?
No, I don't mind, because my contacts due up, so I can change then.
Anywhere. Well, I'll tell you my favorite. Now, you're in the UK, so your choices may be somewhat different than here in the US, but I'm pretty sure you have access to the Droid Incredible, which might have a different name in the UK. And I will actually ask my chat room, because they'll probably, there's quite a few UK listeners, and they may know what the brand names are. The HTC Desire HD.
I've tried that a bit, and that's really nice. I was also looking at the Samsung Galaxy S.
Now the nice thing about the Galaxy S is they use those AMOLED screens. They're very pretty screens.
Yeah.
That I believe the HTC is an OLED screen as well. So you both of them should be pretty good looking. I'll tell you what I look for at this point in an Android phone. I look for the phone with the fewest customizations. You know, HTC does an all right job. I like the HTC Sense. That's the customization they lay on top of Android. I'm not as crazy about what Samsung does on top of Android, and I don't like too much. I have a Motorola Droid X, and I'm not crazy about what the Motorola Blur, which is on top of that as well. So of the three, I would say my choice would be HTC, because they, even though they do customize heavily, it seems to me that they customize the least annoyingly. But you have to try it. I mean, Sam, this is your phone, right? It's a very personal thing.
Yeah, definitely. My father's got the iPhone 4, and he's having a lot of trouble with the antenna gate and whatnot. And,
No kidding. Which carrier is he on?
He's on T-Mobile, because T-Mobile recently acquired the iPhone and all now.
Yeah, because I know Orange and Note 2 both had them. But so it's on T-Mobile in the UK, you're also having antenna problems. That's very interesting.
Yeah, it's strange.
Yeah, because I've heard some people say, oh, no, we don't have any trouble at all. It's a U.S. thing. It's an AT&T thing. And then I hear a number of people in the U.S. say, well, I got AT&T with a different phone, and it's fine. In fact, I think we're going to solve this, because the Windows mobile phone, the new Windows mobile phone is an AT&T phone. And I've been told by people who've had it for a while, don't have any of those antenna problems, don't have any dropped calls. And if that's the case, I think you've got a pretty strong case that the problems with the iPhone 4 ain't AT&T. It's the iPhone 4 itself. And if your dad's having trouble with it in Wales, well, I think that indicts it as the phone's problem. So I would say, I love Android. Android, the only negative on Android, there are a couple. One is this one I talked about, which is that the carriers and the manufacturers customize heavily. So there is no such thing as a plain Android phone. The only one that's a plain Android phone is the one Google used to sell, the the Nexus One, because Google didn't add any customizations to it. But you know, you can't even buy that anymore. That was just plain old Froyo 2.2 Android, and it's beautiful. It's elegant. It's beautiful. You know, it's definitely my preferred. The other problem with Android phones is that every manufacturer has a different screen size, is different, you know, this and that. They're all different cameras. So there's a lot of heterogeneity in the Android marketplace. Now, that some people say is good. That gives you choice, right? And notice Microsoft, though, has responded by, even though they are using four different manufacturers on two different carriers in the U.S., they have a hardware standard, and they are not letting the manufacturers customize. And they're letting the carriers put some additional apps. AT&T puts UVerse on. T-Mobile has its own TV app. But that's it. So a Windows Phone experience is going to be, you know, they're all on 1 gigahertz processors, 5 megapixel cameras. Very, you know, different form factors, but all 800 by 480 screens. So they're going to be very consistent in that respect. And I think customers, you know, it's interesting. Some people say, well, I want choice. And you certainly have that in the Android world. Some people say, but that's confusing. I don't want choice. And then, you know, iPhone. That's the opposite side of the scale where Steve Jobs makes all the choices for you so you don't have to. Somewhere in between, there must be a good solution. Thanks for the call, Sam. It's really nice to know you're listening in the UK. I really appreciate it. Let's get Scott Wilkinson on in just a bit. Scott's our home theater expert. We're going to put him up on the hotline on the phone. But before we do that, I do want to take a little break. You want me? Which one? Carbonite Pro. Oh, I'd love to talk about Carbonite Pro. You know, we had that caller whose IT department deleted all his stuff. This is where Carbonite Pro might have come in handy. We've talked about Carbonite Consumer before. Carbonite Consumer is a product that individuals use to back up the contents of their hard drives to the internet, where it's safe and can be retrieved from any computer, even an iPhone or a BlackBerry, anytime. And a lot of small businesses said, boy, that's what we need. So Carbonite came up with Carbonite Pro. You don't pay for a number of users. You pay by the amount of data you use, and it's very affordable. Prices start at $10. And if you have, let's say you have 8 users or 2 gigabytes each, you're talking about $15 a month. I mean, it's a great deal. Automatic. You have a central dashboard, so you know that all your systems are backed up. But any user can restore their own data. So if we have a caller like our first caller where he wants his data back, he can do it. He doesn't have to go begging to the IT department. You can get your data back at any time, anywhere. As I said, with the iPhone app, that's free. The BlackBerry app, you can even log into your Carbonite account from your the next cubicle over and get all your data back. CarbonitePro.com. Try it free for 30 days. It is a great solution. They're very good on handholding. Windows PCs only right now, but most businesses, that's what they're using. CarbonitePro.com. Give them a try. I think you'll like it. Now, let's get to Scott Wilkinson. He is our home theater expert, our guru. I don't know what was going on with Skype, but at least we've got you on phone. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Leo. I don't know what happened. I can hear you on Skype and see you and everything. And my Skype image there that you're putting out on the stream looks pretty weird, too. So I'm not sure what's going on.
Well, you know, sometimes voice over the internet doesn't work, but even though the phone doesn't sound as good, at least it always works.
Exactly.
So what can we talk about today? You have some questions from viewers?
Well, I always do. Never at a loss for that. But I wanted to let you know and let the listeners know that I actually got a, shall we say, a in-depth demo of Google TV.
Oh, I'd love to hear about that.
And it is very good. I am extremely impressed. This was a demo this week put on actually by Logitech, who, you know, make mice and trackpads and all sorts of interface devices. Remote controls, too. The Harmony One is my favorite universal remote of all time, bar
yes.
none. It's hands
yeah.
wonderful.
A little pricey, and so is the Google TV at $299.
Correct. It is a little pricey, but I was amazed. Google TV is something that I've actually been wanting for a really long time, and I didn't even really know it till I got this demo. Basically, I thought originally it was just going to be another source of online content, and it is that, but it's much more. It aggregates everything, broadcast TV over the air, satellite, cable, internet TV, online delivered TV, and the web. So I've always wanted to be able to, while I'm watching TV, in my home theater to be able to go, oh, hey, that's an interesting thing. Let me look that up online. Well, up till recently, I've had to, you know, go into my office and boot up my computer and so on and so forth. Here, with Google TV, all you have to do is say, oh, let me go look that up, and it shows up in a window on the screen. And this, to me, is very important. The other really important thing about it is that its search function. We know that Google is, you know, the search king, right? They have these search algorithms that let you search for things and find them quickly. Google TV does that for TV and video content. And so you search for, we at this demo, we searched for Unbreakable, this movie Unbreakable.
Yeah.
Found it on Dish Network Live. It found it.
Now, of course, to do that, you'd have to have a Dish connected. In fact, Logitech's encouraging people to get a Dish DVR because it'll search the DVR as well.
Because Google,
but only a Dish DVR.
Well, Google TV has developed a specific relationship with Dish Network. That is true. However, Google TV will go and look at the program guides of other services and be able to find stuff that way.
Oh, so if I have Comcast and a Comcast DVR, it'll at least say, well, it's on Comcast on this channel at this time, but it won't be able to say that you've recorded it.
Right. It won't go into a Comcast DVR and tell you that you've recorded it.
Right.
Or a DirecTV DVR and tell you that you've recorded it, but it can find that it's playing because the electronic program guide has that information. So it found a YouTube stream. A YouTube trailer, I should say, of Unbreakable. I went and looked for Home Theater Geeks. It found it, no problem.
That's your show.
Yeah.
Now, you must like that.
Did.
Now, how did you search? Did you search for Home Theater Geeks and it found it? Wow.
Yep.
That's great. Now, this is a podcast that Scott does. It's not on TV anywhere. It's only on the internet. But you can find it in Google TV. That's very cool. Scott Wilkinson. We'll talk again next week. He's at ultimateavmag.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number if you want to talk about computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, anything like that. Scott Wilkinson's podcast is Home Theater Geeks, as he mentioned. You can find it at twit.tv/HTG. He records it live on our Twit Netcast network every Monday at 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern. At live.twit.tv. So you can watch it live, but you can always download it. It's on iTunes, the Zune Marketplace. Just search for Home Theater Geeks or go to twit.tv/HTG. Our website is techguylabs.com. We'll have a link there too. We also have a link to the live video, the chat room, which is a great place to go. This is kind of my brain externalized. That's techguylabs.com. Carl in New York, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks for calling, Carl. What can I do for you today?
Yeah, I have a podcast.
Congratulations.
And I want to know how to get a live stream, like, without using the GAM.
Oh, there's lots of different companies now that do that. Ustream is probably the most popular. Ustream.tv. Do you want to do a live video stream?
Yep, and audio.
Yeah, well, of course, when you get video, you get audio, too. But you can do audio without video. But if you want to do video, you know, you have a video camera. You can actually use the webcam built into your computer. And most of the time, that's what people use. Ustream.tv is free. Justin.tv is also free. Stickam, you mentioned, that's a third choice. You don't want to use that. That's fine. And I keep holding out hope that Google is going to do something along these lines with YouTube. They did a test run with some video podcasters a couple of weeks ago. Had some technical issues. But I think they're headed in this direction. There's also a company called Livestream. So I'm just looking at the chat room. It looks like those are the four: Justin, Stickam, Ustream, Livestream. and potentially YouTube down the road. If I had to pick one, and I'd be, well, it's hard to say. I don't want to pick favorites because we broadcast on both Justin and Ustream. Both of them are pretty good, Carl. Jane in Chicago, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jane.
Yes, Leo.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I want to set a PC with Windows XP up for my grandson. And you spoke of a software that motels use that every time you reboot, it goes back to the original.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, Microsoft, if you're still using XP, they don't offer it for Windows 7 anymore. I don't know if you could still download it, but Microsoft offered a free program that would do that called Steady State. And same idea, but a commercial program is Ferronix Deep Freeze. So does Microsoft, let me ask the chat room, or I can check this on the web, but does Microsoft still offer Steady State at least as a download for XP or Vista? I know they kind of put the kibosh on it for Windows 7 for reasons I don't understand. Maybe, I don't know. So Windows Steady State. If you Google Microsoft and Steady State, if they still offer it, I'm going to do that right now. They it looks like you could still download it. They say, important announcement. It will continue to be available through June 30th, 2011. Nice thing about this, Jane, is it's free. Should be pretty easy to install. And once you install it, you kind of have some settings. But it's exactly what you just described, which is, when you reboot the computer, it restarts. And it's great if you've got kids, your grandson. Kids are often a source of spyware and viruses because they don't pay any attention. They just click, 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 click. If they get that antivirus 2009 warning, you and I might say, oh, wait, hold on. Hold your horses there. That's probably a trick. But the kid might go, ooh, grandma's computer's got a virus, and you click it and then download it and install it. And, of course, he's installed the virus. But the beauty is when you got steady state, you just reboot, and you're back to the way you were. Now, Terry in the chat room is saying something that contradicts what I've been told, so I'll take it with a grain of salt. Terry says that Microsoft does say they're going to have steady state available for Windows 7 at some point. I asked Paul Thurrott about this, who does our Windows podcast. He said, no, they killed it. So I don't know. Maybe it's a temporary thing. I can't understand why they would kill it, because it's such an incredibly useful thing. Faronics makes the deep freeze program. And if Microsoft does, in fact, not bring back steady state for Windows 7, you can use deep freeze on Windows 7. But it ain't free. Jason Mask 13 in our chat room saying, we use steady state at school. Yes, schools love it. But the problem with it is it's never updated. Yeah, for some reason, Microsoft seems to have just kind of let it die. I'm not sure why. Moving on. Thank you for the call, Jane. Mike, Portland, Maine. Hey, Mike. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. You are the best. You helped my mom with her Optimum Online, even though she can't watch the Giants anymore. But,
isn't that frustrating? Now, and what's funny is Optimum Online is a great internet service provider. Cablevision is a very forward-thinking company. I don't know who to blame.
Well, I tell you, I blame Fox, because I truly believe that if you are broadcasting something for free that you could pick up with an antenna, I know the FCC doesn't agree, but there is no right to charge for somebody else picking it up if I'm willing to pay for that.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. You're right. I mean, they're offering it free over the air.
Right. And if they're offering it free over the air, if I choose to pay for it, what's it their business?
Yeah.
I don't know.
You never know with these big companies. They're all so greedy, and cable companies are not notoriously consumer-minded. I'm not going to let Cablevision off the hook.
I hate cable companies, and I even own stock in one of them. I hate to say it. I got it through all sorts of different – but anyway, that's not what
And another good point in our chat room, Stephen3x is saying, and this is absolutely true, look, Fox has ads on there. They're making money on it.
Absolutely.
Making a ton of money on it, I'm sure, on Channel 5 in New York. So,
absolutely. This whole thing just started because they realized they could charge, so they started doing it. Must carry rights as well, meaning that...
That's what I don't understand. The FCC used to require this. I don't understand what's going on here.
Absolutely.
Hey, craziness. Mike, we got to take a break for a local news at the top of the hour. Can you hang on?
Sure can.
All right. You'll be first out of the box when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by Squarespace.com. Now, anyone can make a professional, slick, beautiful site easily, quickly, and affordably with Squarespace.com. I use it, my friends use it, and I invite you to try it. Go to Squarespace.com, use a code TECHGUY for 10% off the life of your account. Squarespace.com, offer code TECHGUY. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888. Ask Leo is the number if you want to talk about all the digital stuff in your life. That's what I'm here to do. Mike's on the line from Portland, Maine. Hello, Mike.
Welcome back.
Thanks for hanging on.
Well, it's great to be able to watch you, although it's a little different being able to see you a little bit later or than when I'm talking to you. But nonetheless, it's great to be able to...
It could be confusing because there's delay, there's encoding, there's, you know...
You're a kid.
I feel like I live in 8 different time zones.
Well, Leo, I'm calling because I'm... It's an eBay issue, and I don't know if you can help me with this or not. I've been an eBay member for over 10 years, buying on eBay, and had pretty good experiences most of the time. A few little problems here and there, as we all tend to. But I just had my account suspended, which I closed. And the reason they did it is because I'm a tough grader. You can ask any of the kids that I teach. I'm a tough grader, and I give people feedback that may be positive, but with a new detailed seller ratings, they have a 5-point scale. And I often give 3s and sometimes 1s for maybe communication because they don't communicate at all, or they communicate constantly, or they the items as described, yeah, that's 3. It's nothing better than described as in 5, and it's no worse than described. eBay to find out why I was suspended, and it's because they ran this new program and they cut anybody out that was giving poor detailed seller ratings.
That's terrible. That's terrible. That's basically saying we're going to lie so that we get more business.
Exactly. That's exactly what happened. And when I called that day, I was on hold for over 2 hours. And they said, we just ran this, and a lot of people are being cut out. And you're one of them, and we're sorry. That's all you can do. You can't buy here anymore.
Wow. Now, there are two sides to this argument. We got Dan in the chat room, who is an eBay seller, and he says, people like this make me angry because I provided exactly the service. It was exactly the right, as described, and I should get a 5 stars. And you're saying, well, no, because you didn't do any better than, you weren't extra good. You're going to get only an average grade. And he says that's a problem.
Feedback is set up so that, I mean, really, it should be unsatisfactory, satisfactory, and outstanding. But they have it,
I agree.
Positive, neutral, and negative. Most should be neutrals. Apparently, they did the same thing with detailed seller ratings, but they never told anyone. It's just stars. Right. It doesn't say, outstanding. It doesn't say bad.
It's 1 to 5 stars. What does a 5-star mean? You're right.
Exactly. And I completely understand what the person in the chat room said, because if I were a seller and this is how they're rating you, and I don't know, I'm not really a seller there, I would expect the 5 stars and want the 5 stars, but they just put this up, ran it through, and boom, I'm cut, as are probably hundreds, thousands of other people, and there's nothing I can do. I don't even know if I can start a new account because they'd have the same address and the same name.
Right. PayPal has a similar problem. It's owned by eBay. Similar problem, which is they're very quick to suspend accounts. And I suspect this is just the way the company is run. I mean, there is no recourse. I'm sure if you look at your eBay agreement, there's no recourse. There's nothing I can do for you. You're just kind of at their mercy, frankly.
Yeah, I didn't know if there was anything that anyone could do or even if you could, I'm sure, you might have not talked to eBay about me, but about this whole system. They're taking my subjective opinion and making an objective decision about me based on my subjective opinion.
Yeah. You're a buyer, not a seller. So they've banned you as a buyer, basically.
They have banned me, or a seller. But yeah, they banned me as a buyer. They said, you're obviously not happy here. We don't want you to buy here anymore.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, I mean, that is their choice, Mike. I don't know what to say, and I don't know both sides of the story. It's up to eBay to decide how they want to enforce that. It, you know, on the one hand, I'd say it sounds like eBay wants only 5-star ratings because then they're going to sell more goods. But of course, if you think about it, eBay doesn't want bad sellers because that's bad for eBay. They only want good sellers. I guess it's really more a debate between you and eBay over what 5 stars mean. You say 5 stars means better than average, better than acceptable. They say, no, it just means acceptable. And when you rate people 3 stars, you're essentially saying unacceptable. And if they're not unacceptable and you're giving them 3-star ratings, we're not going to allow you to participate. I can't get in the middle of it because I don't know who's right. I understand both sides of the argument. All I would say to you, Mike, is you have no recourse except to come on a radio show and tell people, and then people who use eBay can maybe be aware of this and decide, you know, who's right in this matter. There are other places to go, although eBay is really the marketplace. eBay has a history of annoying both sellers and buyers, but that may be part of that. May be just part of being an internet business. So I'm looking at the chat room, and the chat room seems in agreement that 5-star means the seller did what they said they would do, that the item arrived as described, it arrived in a timely fashion, that the seller was responsive when you had questions for them. So 5 stars means that basically what you would say is an average, which is a 3-star. I don't know. I don't know. All I can say is you've been heard, Mike. And I thank you. I appreciate it. Jim in Chula Vista, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo.
Hey, how are you, Jim? Welcome to the show.
I'm fine, thanks. Hey, when you were talking about the Social Network movie, I think it was a week ago or maybe...
The Facebook movie, yeah.
Yeah, you said there was a lot of tools out there to help create a website when you were speaking about something else, even if you don't know how to write code.
That's right.
Can you tell me more about these tools, what's available out there?
I'll tell you where this comes up in conjunction with Facebook. You know, Facebook is a place that a lot of people have a presence on. They may have a personal page, but they also may have their business on there. You know, you can have Facebook pages for a business, for a person, you know, a celebrity. I have 2 Facebook pages, one for my podcast business and one for me personal. And of course, my own personal site, which is only friends. And so I think a lot of people, a lot of businesses create a site on Facebook and say, isn't that great? I'm done. I have a presence. I can give people, and you'll see this all the time. I'm in Vegas yesterday at the Mandalay Bay. Big posters saying, visit our Facebook page. They used to say, visit our webpage. Now they say, visit our Facebook page, which is all well and good. But there's a slight problem. You don't own your Facebook page. Facebook owns it. So if Facebook, you know, like this last caller, if Facebook for any reason at all decides to kill your page or boot you off Facebook, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
If they own, technically, they kind of own the content. You know, if you read the agreement, they assert rights to the content. So there's a, you know, it's fine. In fact, I think it's good to have a Facebook page, but it should not be the last. It should not be the last thing you do. It should not be the only thing you do on the internet. You ought to have your own page as well. And so there now it comes up. Well, how do I do that? Because I'm not a graphics artist. I'm not a programmer. I don't know HTML. So how do we make a page easily? And that's a very good question. You've heard me talk about Squarespace. They're our sponsor, disclaimer.
Mm-hmm.
But they're a sponsor because I've been using them for some time. I think they're really good. They make it very easy to design a site. You don't need to have any HTML or CSS or any of those buzzword skills. You can do it all with your mouse, point and click. They have templates. They're not the only one. There's other ones out there. There's WordPress.com. That's absolutely free. The difference between a WordPress and a Squarespace is WordPress is going to make, you know, it's free, but they're going to make money. They have to make money. I mean, they have to be a business by putting ads on your site. You may not like that. Squarespace does not do that. There's also TypePad, which is more like Squarespace. All three of these, TypePad.com, WordPress.com, Squarespace.com, do both hosting, which means they run the computers that serves your site to your visitors, and offer a layer of software on top that lets you both design and run and maintain a page. Sometimes that software is called content management software, CMS software. Mm-hmm. So the CMS software on WordPress.com is WordPress. On TypePad.com is, I guess they call it TypePad, Squarespace. I don't know what they call it, but it's the software that you'll use. All three of them have templates, so you could start with a site with a professionally designed template. They have customizability, so you could take that template and make it look more like your own. In my opinion, Squarespace is the easiest on that one. They have plugins that you can add that give you additional functionality. And then you know, you can add content. This is very important. A lot of people create a website and then never change it. That's a brochure. That's not a website. And it's, you know, for some businesses, that's sufficient. But you're going to get more traffic to your site if you're always updating, if you're always putting more content in. What's the business?
I'd rather not say it over to –
Okay. That's fine. Just giving you a chance to plug it. But let's say you sell power tools. Let's give you an example. Let's say you sell power tools. So you create a site. You've got your power tools on there. You want an e-commerce system. Squarespace does not offer an e-commerce system. TypePad, I believe, has one. I'm not sure about WordPress.com. So that's something you're going to look for. Is if you're going to sell something on the website, you're going to look for something called e-commerce. It might be better to go somewhere like Yahoo Business, where they actually will do the back end for you. They'll do the credit card and all of that stuff, all those transactions. There are a lot of companies that will do that. They're more focused on selling. But I would suggest, even if you're just selling power tools, that you figure out a way to put something fresh and new there, at least specials and updates. But you may even want to have Jim's Corner. Here's where I tell you, why Makita is better than DeWalt, or why I'll review the latest power drills, something like that. Put some content in there. You know, how to use a power drill without stripping the screw heads. I don't know what it is, but if every week or so you put up a little post, it drives people back to the site. It makes it more friendly, more engaging, more personal. And in the long run, you're going to sell more power tools. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. If you're outside the U.S., call via Skype out, because it is a toll free number, 888-827-5536. Anything with a chip in it, we'll be glad to talk about it. Milka in Santa Clarita, California. I think I'm saying that right. I hope I'm saying that right. Hi, Milka. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Hi. The question I have is in regards to local phone service. I had recently moved into this home we're in and set up local service. I get low discount because of, I'm in school. But long story short, I had a situation where all the system, I bundled it by mistake. I was talked into a lot of stuff. Yeah, and I bundled it, and I hadn't even thought why I never did that before. So now we're without anything. I have, they bundled the TV because we have to have that to watch TV, regular TV here, the internet, the whole nine yards. So where
I'm not a big fan of bundling because it's all with one company, and frankly, if it's a cable company, they don't really specialize in phone service, so they're going to give you a strange kind of VoIP service that's not the same as landline phone service, et cetera,
no,
et cetera, et cetera.
Actually, I don't mean to interrupt you. Actually, it was what happened was I called to just get the home number so my son would have access to call me on my cell. And then the guy talked to me and said, were you looking for any other services? I said, well, maybe not now, but later. And he kind of was kind of sense. I'm just saying, I felt talked into.
He jammed you into that.
Yeah,
what's the company? So, what company? What company did that?
AT&T is our major local company, and then the TV is.
So now you have AT&T phone, you have UVerse, You have AT&T wireless.
I didn't get UVerse because they said it wasn't offered.
Oh, they offer you Dish or DirecTV.
It was Direct.
Yeah, they give you a satellite service. Yeah.
Exactly. So
do you get at least do you get a deal if you do all of that? I mean, does it cost you less?
No, it was a deal. I mean, it definitely was a deal. I had to do a 2-year, I think, with the Direct or the Internet. I can't remember. I have to look at the documents. But this is where I'm at right now. I'm kind of pissed because on myself and then with them as well, because I said to them, you know, I want to just make sure I can secure local service, you know, because we have an income issue here. And now they're tacking. They're saying I have to obligate myself to the, you know, how when you cancel early.
Yeah, so that's early termination fee.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, what do you want? You want landline service or cell service? What are you looking for now?
Well, right now I have a Boost for my cell, and I just use it because I just pay one flat fee. Okay,
yeah.
And so
Boost is
Boost is cheap.
Yeah,
it's great.
Does everything you want.
The phones are kind of crappy, to be honest.
Yeah, it's not a smartphone service. It's just a basic cell phone.
Yes. Yeah. And I can use email and just whatever. Okay.
Right.
But right now I'm trying to see, because I was told when I talked to the AT&T service provider that, I'm hostage to using you for a local service. And the service person said, no, that's not true. You could use other companies. But the challenge is, who are these other companies? I had a, I know.
When you say local service, you mean I'm trying to get this clear.
Landline
service.
Landline service.
Here's the deal on landline. AT&T owns that copper into your house. Nobody else has copper into your house. They're what's called the incumbent local carrier. So any other service that you get, like say a Vonage or a Magic Jack, would be a voice over internet product, not a landline product. The only people who could sell you landline is AT&T. They have a monopoly.
That's what I thought.
So when they say, oh, no, you can buy it from somebody else, they're probably talking about VoIP service, not about copper or landline. There are some markets, and maybe Santa Clarita is one, I don't know, where there are multiple local carriers. This is very unusual. The FCC... Because in order to get a cable pipe into your house or a phone pipe into your house, it's expensive. They have to put telephone poles up or they have to trench. They have to run copper to your house. It's expensive. So the FCC gives a monopoly, the oldest monopoly in the world, to the phone company. Recently, they gave the monopoly to the cable company. Those guys have a monopoly of pipe of copper into your house. With the cable company, you know, you could say to them, as they do to the phone company, you've got to offer internet service from other companies. So you can get internet service over that copper on the phone line from another company, but not phone service, not true landline phone service. And I'll be honest with you, there's nothing cheaper and there's nothing probably more reliable. Cheaper is not true, actually. But you can get the, they have a low cost lifeline service, which is probably what you should get, especially if you're out of work. They're gonna give you a deal on lifeline service, and get very inexpensive service. The advantage of this is it works if you have the right kind of phone, you know, not a plug in phone, but it works if the power's out. It works with 911, so that they know exactly where that call's coming from. There are just some real advantages to a true copper landline, and that you're going to have to get from AT&T. So I just get the cheapest lifeline service you can from AT&T. Use your cell phone for everything else, certainly for long distance calls. But it's really for safety. I don't recommend using a Vonage or a Magic Jack as your only phone provider, because 911 doesn't work as well. It doesn't work when the power's out. Doesn't work when the internet's down. It doesn't work in a disaster. I believe everybody should have basic landline service, copper wire from the local telephone company. And then everything else, you know, you can add on to it later. But I think you got to have LAND, landline service. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by Carbonite.com. Carbonite, it's backup done right. Try it free for 2 weeks. Use the offer code Leo, and you'll save 2 months. Carbonite.com, offer code Leo. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Mary's on the line from Apple Valley, our next caller. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Leo.
How are you today?
Fine. And thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling. What can I do for you?
Yes, I have two questions. The first one, I just need a little bit of explanation. On my HP DV Pavilion series laptop, the motherboard died. Mm-hmm. It was only 3 years old. And I took it to a technician, and they instantly diagnosed it. And I wondered about a suggestion. If you know what kind of motherboards they use, and a suggestion about a possible new laptop, what brand?
Well, I'm confused. Do you want to fix the existing one?
I am getting it fixed.
When you buy an HP laptop, don't worry. You can't buy the motherboard. You have to go to an HP repair facility, and they use HP parts to replace it. You can't do it yourself.
Yeah, I am getting it repaired, but
There's no need to know. I mean, it is an HP motherboard. They may use Intel parts. I'm not sure exactly.
Oh, okay. And I wondered about a suggestion for a new laptop.
You don't want to get another HP, is that it?
That's right. There's a couple I want to avoid too. I want to avoid the Asus, the Toshiba, Compaq, and I don't use Macintoshes.
Why do you want to, just out of curiosity, did you read somewhere that those brands are not very good or something like that?
Well, yes, I did. I had a Toshiba before. And
you had bad experiences.
It didn't work out.
You know, it's funny because I would agree with you with those names. So I would not recommend any of those. Well, the Mac I'd recommend, but you don't want a Mac laptop. You want Windows.
No, it's just that I work in the teaching profession, and mm-hmm. I've used them before. I personally find them difficult. No,
absolutely.
Not slurring their name at all.
It's okay? A personal computer. You get to choose the kind you want. Mm-hmm. I really am a fan of Dell's. I think they make very good stuff. Now, if you want a rock solid business-focused notebook, I think the Lenovo's are also very good.
Okay.
Both of those brands, you know, look, all computers have problems from time to time. What I look at is not whether they have problems, but whether they have an unusual number of problems, and more importantly, whether the companies are responsive when you have a problem.
Yes.
And Dell's, I think, pretty good at that.
Okay. What do you think of Gateway, Sony, and Panasonic?
Sony's okay. Support is not great on Sony. I would not recommend a Gateway.
Right.
Panasonic is very good. I think those Toughbooks are excellent. I don't have experience with Panasonic service and support. I'm not sure how good that is. Sony is notoriously kind of slow to respond. But in most cases, when you buy a Sony or Panasonic, you'll probably be buying a service contract either from the place you buy it or they'll sell it to a third party. And so you won't be getting service or support directly from Panasonic or from Sony. You'll be getting it from a third party. So I think those are fine. So let's make the list now. It's Dell, it's Lenovo, it's Sony or Panasonic. I think any of those four make excellent laptops, and you're no more. I would say, you know, look, you may have a problem, but you're not more likely to have a problem with those. And I think some of the other names you named, you are more likely to have a problem.
Okay. And do you know how to temporarily stop the auto update download on the Microsoft system?
Yeah, it's in the settings. I'd be very nervous about doing that because those updates are really vital for security.
Oh, I just meant temporarily because a couple of times I had to download something that took almost 48 hours. It was a ridiculously long time.
Are you on dial-up?
Yes, I am.
Ah, well, that's a good reason to delay it. Yeah, what you can do is have them download in the background instead of having it wait for you to download it. They've really fixed the update facility, but you're right. For people on dial-up, these are often hundreds of megabytes, these downloads, service packs particularly. And that's you want to do that overnight. You don't want to do that when you're trying to get some work done.
I tried that.
Yeah. I'd be very careful. Yes, you can disable automatic updates. It's in the control panel. You go to the updates section. You can say, I don't want to do it. I think it might be in the security section on Windows 7. But I'm very nervous in saying disable it, because ultimately you've got to have those, and you really need to have them as soon as you can, as soon as you realistically can, because as soon as Microsoft puts those updates out, it's an announcement to the bad guys. We've got a problem, and the bad guys quickly make software to take advantage of it. So once they put those updates out, it's as if Microsoft said, come and get us, boys. The only people who are safe are the people who apply the updates immediately. If you don't apply them immediately, oh, you're in trouble. You know what you might do? If you're going to get a new laptop, it's going to have Wi-Fi built in. Go have a cup of coffee at Starbucks every second Tuesday. And while you're there, download the updates and run them. I agree with you. I understand why it's a pain in dial-up. And these updates, you know, they pretty much everyone now assumes, wrongly, obviously. But I would say every company assumes, oh, everybody's on broadband. We can have a 150 megabyte update. No big deal. And boy, anybody on dial-up's going, why? why? You don't have to have high-speed internet. I'm not going to make you get high-speed internet, but the good news is you've got Wi-Fi and any new laptop's automatic. You just find an open access point. Starbucks, all of them have it. McDonald's now has it. Take an afternoon off and download those updates. But you really ought to get them. You really ought to get them as soon as they're available, because otherwise you're a sitting duck. Luis, you told me, but I forgot. What? Oh, thank you. You know, as long as we're talking about this, it's kind of timely. We're going to talk to Shannon in Redondo Beach in just a second. She's got an iPod. She wants to get videos on it. But before we do that, and Mary, you should be listening too, it's not enough. Windows Update, of course, is probably the single most important thing you can do to protect yourself. But it's not enough. You also need a good antivirus. You need Nod32. This is the best little antivirus for Windows. I've recommended it for years. It is fast and lightweight, so it doesn't slow you down. It's the most effective out there. That's why CNET just gave it 5 out of 5 stars and said it's the best antivirus. That's why the Independent Virus Bulletin, very prestigious virus bulletin, says Nod32 hasn't missed a virus in 10 years in the wild. 10 years. And not just viruses, but spyware, adware, phishing scams, even rootkits, which are the hardest things to root out, if you'll forgive the pun. And Nod32's got advanced heuristics. It watches virus for virus-like activity and catches viruses even before the signature updates. It's a really nice little package. And it, you know, yes, there are free choices out there, but none of them as good as Nod32. And how much is it worth to you to have your system safe and secure? Go to eset.com/Leo and try it free for 30 days. You'll see what I mean. Just fast and effective. It's exactly what you want. Or you can call 866-935-ESET. If you get a new computer, like Mary, get ESET right away. I know they often come with a trial version of, I'm not going to name names, but stuff you don't want. Get rid of that and get Nod32. 866-935-ESET or visit eset.com/Leo. If you use Windows, man, you need Nod32. Shannon in Redondo Beach, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Shannon.
Hi, Mr. Laporte.
Oh, you don't have to call me. You can call me Leo.
Okay. I got an iPad with the video camera.
Okay.
For my birthday.
Congratulations. That's a great birthday present. How old are you?
14.
Congratulations. So you got to get it. Of course, the only way. Oh, I see. You shot videos with your iPod. And now you want to see them on the computer.
Yeah.
I got it. Do you have a Mac or Windows?
I have Windows.
Yeah. See that. Unfortunately, because the iPod's made by Apple, there's kind of this assumption. Well, you have a Mac, so you're just going to use iPhoto to do it. But you don't have iPhoto because you don't have a Macintosh. So iPod videos. Is it an iPod Nano or is it the iPod Touch?
The Nano.
So let me just see. I know there are a number of programs you can use. Windows Media Player will import. I think, does Picasa also import? Let me ask the chat room. I think Picasa would be my first choice. I just love Picasa. PICASA.com, and it's free, Shannon. So you either use Windows Movie Media Player, which you already have. Of course, you could always download iTunes. You have iTunes anyway. Yeah. And it will copy the video. Yeah. But I tell you what, I like, my favorite program for photos and for video too is Picasa. PICASA. Not Picasso, not like the painter. Picasa. PICASA. But I'm also going to put in the show notes at techguylabs.com the Apple document that says how to do this. It's a support document, and thanks to the chat room for this. HT3837. It says you connect the Nano to your computer, you open iTunes, you select the iPod, you turn on enable disk use, and now you can just copy the videos right off. So you kind of have to say to the computer, this is a disk, a USB disk. And once it sees the USB disk, then you can copy them right off. It's a folder called DCIM. That's where all the videos are stored. You can open them then with Windows Media Player. Since you have iTunes, you'll also have QuickTime on there. I think you can import from Picasa as well. So those are, the thing you need to know is you open iTunes, you click on your Nano, it says Shannon's Nano. And then in the summary tab, you check the box that says enable disk use. Enable disk use. And then it shows up as a disk on your computer in the My Computer, and you can copy the DCIM file. That's where all the videos are. That seems unnecessarily complicated. I'll be honest with you. This is an example of how Apple really doesn't get Windows, do they? Picasa will also do it. And I'll put the link to the Picasa explanation as well. Thanks for the call, Shannon. Enjoy your birthday present. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Icon Jonathan Colton's song in honor of mathematician Benoit Mandelbrot, who is also a geek icon, created the Mandelbrot set, created really the field of fractal geometry and applied it to physics, biology, even finance. Benoit Mandelbrot passed away on Thursday at the age of 85. A really brilliant man, brilliant mathematician, and beloved by computer scientists and computer users as well. If you've never played with any fractal software, just Google fractal software or the Mandelbrot set, and you'll find some really beautiful images and software you can run to create your own fractal images on your own computer. Jonathan Colton is a wonderful performer who plays and records a lot of music that geeks love about geek topics, including horror films and zombies and pirates, and you can find him on the web, too. Jonathan, C-O-U-L-T-O-N. In fact, if you search for Benoit Mandelbrot and Colton, this is from a YouTube video that was made of the song. 8888 Ask Leo. Final few minutes of the show. I will put a link to this in the show notes, by the way. Thanks to James DeRuvo, who's writing all this down. It's techguylabs.com. You'll find links there to our chat room. It's a really great place. Lots of fun people. I think of them as my brains. They're so smart. You'll also find a link to the live video that we do, not only of this show, but all week long, pretty much 24/7. on my Twit network, twit.tv. Links to the podcasts of this show and others as well. It's all at techguylabs.com. Back to the phones we go. And Nate in Laguna Niguel, California. Hey, Nate. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks. Hey, a couple of things real cool, really quick. I got the HTC by, you know, the Aria.
Ah, how do you like it?
I love the phone. Absolutely love it. It's my first smartphone, and it's very intuitive. Just absolutely the best.
It's neat. That first smartphone's a big deal, isn't it? It's such a leap from a phone that just makes phone calls and maybe does some texting to something that you can run apps on. And of course, the Aria is a beautiful screen. It's an Android phone. Nice choice.
Yeah, coming out of the Razer flip phone, you know, so that.
Oh, wow. You were due for a new phone.
Oh, texting was killing me. Just killing.
Yeah. B. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. So anyway, I switched over my Plantronics Bluetooth to it, and it has distortion. It wasn't operating so well, so I tried to jump around on a couple of them, but I didn't know if you had a recommendation on the best earpiece, you know, wireless to use with that.
I'll tell you, for Android phones, I like the Blue Ant T1, and the reason is Blue Ant makes an Android application that goes with the T1 that will do things like read your text messages to you from the phone. It also imports your address book and announces the name of the caller in a robotic voice, but it announces it, and it works with voice commands on the Google phones. You know, they haven't yet updated the Aria, I don't think, to 2.2, but when you get to 2.2, you can search for everything. You can give commands to your phone to play music, all sorts of stuff in the latest version. And this will work very nicely. It's also, it's very lightweight, and it's got a great noise reduction and so forth. I'm very happy with it. Not very expensive either. The T1 from blueant.com.
Excellent. Check it out. Also, it comes with a 2 gigabyte, you know, micro SD card, which I've already loaded up with my music and photos. But you can upgrade it to 60 gig or 32 gig. And I just need to know the best place, best price to get one of those 32 gig.
Yeah, you could shop around. These aren't very expensive. I always just buy them on Amazon, and I usually get the SanDisk.
Okay. Does it really matter if it's going to be like this? The sixth generation or whatever?
No, in fact, you don't need the fat. You know, they have 6X and 10X now. You don't need the fastest by any means. The phone isn't that fast. So, okay. You know, you could get a category four, class four, I guess they call it. You know, that's get the cheap one. But what you want is reliable. Class two is fine.
Okay.
Just you're looking for SDHC. I would get 32 gigs because it's not that expensive. I think it's like $30.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Let me just check. I'll look at the...
shopping, and I was checking even some stuff out of China. Is that bad?
Do not get cheap flash from China. Okay. My strong recommendation. A Class 4 card, it's a little expensive. The 32 gig Class 4 card is $85 on Amazon. And Class 4 is plenty fast. Class 2 is $73. That's even fast enough. You certainly don't need Class 8 or Class 10. That's for these fancy high-speed cameras that are writing data very fast. You don't need that.
Gotcha. Okay.
And 16 gigs. 16 gigs, if you know, you'll have some idea. 16's a lot. 16 gigs, we're talking about $39.
Excellent.
But do get SanDisk. Do get a brand name. Because what happens with the cheap flash RAM is, you know... The quality is very inconsistent.
Okay. Yeah, we'll do that. I think because I got a ton of music, you know, I'm using this, the Aria for everything now, so I'm going to load it up.
Yeah.
You know, but
it's your player. It's your music player. You know, I always get as much memory as I can afford because you'll fill it.
Okay, so are they going to ever come out? What's great about the Aria is you can always upgrade. So are they going to have a 64 then eventually, you think?
I don't think they'll upgrade to 64. Well, who knows? You know what? As long as it supports SDHC, I presume it will support 64. It's just that there's nobody making a 64 card right now, or if they are, they're very limited, very prohibitively expensive.
Yeah.
But yeah, eventually there'll be 64, sure.
The Aria being able to, you know, any size you want, where if you're going to, you know, dive into an iPhone, you're stuck, you know?
Right.
16 gig or 32, whatever you buy.
Right. Hey, Nate, enjoy your new phone. Thanks for calling. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Leo. Thanks.
Take care. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by Stamps.com. Why wait in line at the post office when you could print your own official U.S. postage right from your Windows PC and your printer? You don't need any special ink or anything. You just need Stamps.com. For a no-risk trial offer worth $100, including $45 free postage, go to Stamps.com. This is a good deal. I mean, even if you had no interest in Stamps.com, you should do this. For $45 free postage, go to stamps.com and use the, they probably don't like me to say that, use the offer code Leo, stamps.com. I think once you try it, you'll realize it's so much better than waiting in line. You'll be a customer. I know I am. Have been for years. My phone number, 8888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. If you're outside the U.S., use Skype out and call that number and it'll be free still. 8888-ASK-LEO. Let's move on to our next call. Lots of them waiting for me. Nick in Minneapolis. You're next, Nick. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling, Nick.
I just want to share my experience with the listeners and viewers, because okay. I always wanted to. To use smartphone, but I never wanted to pay AT&T, you know, for...
Yeah, I mean, think about it. I keep saying, you know, nobody, we don't want to know this. We don't want to think about it. But the truth is, it costs $200 for the phone. And then, you know, something like $100 a month for 2 years. That's $2,600. That's more than a desktop PC. That's a lot of money.
That's right, sir. So I came out with an idea because Clearwire actually started their service like a couple of weeks ago, their WiMAX service.
Yes.
And I bought the iPod Touch 4G. So for the past 2 weeks, you know, I have been using my iPod Touch as my iPhone. And it works really great. And yesterday, I actually canceled my service to Sprint.
Wow.
So I'm actually happy with what I have been experimenting because it works great.
So you call phone lines too and other cell phones too using that?
Because I signed up for the Skype, you know, and it's $3.
Yep.
You know, US, which is unlimited. So
you have unlimited Skype out. They call it Skype out, the ability to call regular phones.
That's right. And I have a Google Voice also, so I have forwarded the Skype number to my Google Voice.
That's a good idea.
I use unlimited text through Gmail. And I get activated the missed call alert. So, you know, I suppose if I have any missed calls, you know, it just goes straight to my Gmail, you know, if I miss any call, which never.
Does it now the 4G, this Clearwire, cost you how much a month?
$25 unlimited. It's including.
What? $25 a month?
Yeah, because I'm using the iPod for the Apple product, which you can use it for iPad, iPhone, and iPod Touch, and it's just $25.
But you have to have a MiFi or something like that. They don't call it the MiFi. What do they call the 4G thing?
It's called iSpot.
iSpot, and it's a piece of hardware.
It's a piece of hardware, and it's very small. It just slips into my pocket, you know, or, you know, my laptop.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you're doing this in Minneapolis. 4G is not available in every city. I think there's about 30 or 40 cities, and then more cities all the time. So obviously, if you go out of town, it may not work. But as long as you're, you know, within Minneapolis, and how is the signal quality and all of that? Is it pretty good? Are you talking to me on it now?
That's right. I'm talking to you on my iPod Touch. Right?
You're on your iPod Touch right now. Do you use a headset?
No, actually, you can use it because, you know, they have a mic now, you know, with the 4G.
So you're just holding it up to your head like an iPhone.
No, actually, you can do that too, or you can use it as hands-free.
So you just got it on the desk and you're talking into it.
That's right. Yep.
Wow. It sounds great.
Yep. So, you know, I love that, you know, experiment, and I would tell others, you know, that if they really want to just get rid of, you know, AT&T contract, you know, they can actually do, you know, just do the experiment. And, you know, if it works, you know, it's good, you know, because it's working for me.
So to reiterate what you're doing, you went to Sprint and you actually clear. Well, you go to the Sprint, though, to get the clear wire, right?
No, actually, I signed up like online, and they actually very next day, they actually sent me the iPod. Right?
Wow. So you went to clearwire.com?
Mm-hmm. Or you can actually call their number, you know, on.
Interesting. This just came to Minneapolis a few weeks ago. So this is something brand new. And as I said, it's not in every city. So you go to clearwire.com, you order the iSpot, and it's $30 a month for unlimited, they say. And I don't know if unlimited is true unlimited or if it's 5 gigabyte unlimited, but it's certainly enough to make your phone calls. Then you get an iPod Touch, the fourth generation, the current one, and you put Skype on it. And Skype, and then you, now this iSpot shows up as Wi-Fi, doesn't it?
That's right. It's the Wi-Fi, and you know, I have been, you know, downloading and uploading the speeds, and on average I get like between 6 to 10 for download, and uplink is close to like 1. So,
well, now 1's plenty for a very good Skype call. You could even do a video if the Skype used the video. Does it use the video?
I watch Netflix all the time, you know, on my iPod Touch. And
no,
know,
no, but I mean,
never...
will it use the front-facing camera on the Touch to do a video phone call?
That's right. Yeah, I have
used it. Will.
You know, it works great.
Wow. Wow. This is very, very intriguing. So basically for $30 a month, you're getting unlimited phone service, unlimited internet. You're getting all the apps because the iPod Touch works with almost all the apps.
Yeah, that's right.
And, wow, I'm tempted to try this myself. That's a great idea, Nick. Yeah.
$25.
It's 20. Okay, so I'm looking at the website. It says $29.99. So you're saying it was $25.
It's iSpot is $25, but if you go the clear spot.
I see.
I think $45. So
get the iSpot. That's a little less.
Don't be.
Wow, isn't that cool? That is, I get it. It's designed to do what you're doing, basically.
That's right, yeah. And it works with the iPad also, you know, if you want to, you know, right. Just don't have.
Now, let me, they're asking in the chat room, if you go outside the 4G area, will it drop down to 3G or even Edge? Will you continue to get connectivity? Even?
I think it's $10 extra if you want the 3G. But my city is actually blanketed with 4G, so I never had a problem.
Right. Okay, very interesting. Nick, I'm so glad you called to share that with us. That's really interesting, and I think a great way, a little loophole that you can get rid of your cell phone service, get rid of your cell phone, now you do have a contract or no for the iSpot. Do you have to pay?
Contract. I can cancel the service anytime.
Wow. That's it. Now, the iSpot is locked to Apple devices, although I'm told that you can hack it if you want to, and use it with other devices. It's MAC address locked. But nevertheless, that's why it's inexpensive, $25. You're going to only use it with your iPod Touch or your iPad or your Mac. I guess it would work with a Mac laptop as well. Very interesting. Nick, thank you very much for that call. Boy, that's a great tip. I like that. And by the way, Clear says it is fully unlimited. Very interesting. They're, you know, remember, they're trying to introduce this new service, this fourth generation WiMAX service. And so they're, of course, aggressively pricing it and so forth. Really cool. Edward, Las Banas, California. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Edward.
Hello, Mr. Laporte. How are you doing tonight?
I'm well. How are you?
Could be better. I'm having a problem with my iTunes.
Yeah. Everybody who calls is having problems with something. It's okay. Yes. We'll walk you through it. What can I do to help?
Well, if I go to where all my 14 terabytes of music is,
Wait a minute. Did you say 14 terabytes?
Yes.
1,400 gigabytes of music?
Yes.
How do you have so much music?
Buy the CDs and remaster them.
Ah, so you're not compressing them. Are you using FLAC or some similar uncompressed codec?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Still, that 14 terabytes, that must be how many songs?
More than I could actually remember.
Yeah. I mean, that's like every song ever recorded, it sounds like. That's amazing. All right. Well, I'm not surprised that iTunes is having trouble with that. That's a pretty big number. What's happening?
What iTunes is actually doing, if I go to where my music is stored, everything looks fine there. But if I go into iTunes and look at my playlist, it doubles or triples the songs I have there. So if I have one song, it shows up three times.
Well, one thing you might try, I mean, I don't know how much customization you've done to your iTunes at this point. If you've done a lot of ratings and so forth, you wouldn't want to blow out your library, but you could just delete your library and rebuild it.
I have, three times.
And you're still getting triplets?
Yes.
Do you have, you have one and only one copy? You don't have three different file formats or something like that?
No. Just one.
Yeah. I don't know what this error is. It wouldn't surprise me if it has to do with the size of the database. You've tried the remove duplicates option in iTunes. What happens then? Does it see them as duplicates?
Yes, it sees them as duplicates. I get rid of them all, and then I come back the next day, and they pop up right there.
Don't know, Edward, but lots of people are listening. There's a lot of people in the chat room. Maybe somebody can give me a suggestion. It might have to do with the 14 terabytes. We'll see. I'll see if I can find a solution for you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by Citrix, makers of Go to Assist Express, the best remote support software on the market today. Try it free. Visit GoToAssist.com/Leo. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888. Ask Leo's a phone number. Well, wait, there's all sorts of debate in the chat room. They had no agreement whatsoever about what could be the problem. Our last caller had 14 terabytes of music. 14, let me say that again. Unless he's misspeaking, that's 1,400 gigabytes, isn't it? No, I'm sorry, that's 14,000 gigabytes. 14, that can't be right. Somebody did some calculations. Now, it's uncompressed music, so that means instead of getting that 10-to-1 compression you'd get with an MP3 or an AAC, you're getting something like 2-to-1 compression. It's about half the size. So each CD would be around 300 or 400 megabytes. So if we did some calculations, somebody said that that's 50,000 CDs. I mean, it's possible. Drives are big. You know, you could have a Drobo with a... I mean, it's possible. Anyway, it's... my guess, he says his iTunes keeps popping up with duplicates. I would guess with that many songs, either there are duplicates, he says there aren't. It'd be pretty hard to figure that out if there's hundreds of thousands of songs. Or iTunes is just saying, I can't, this is, you're out of control, dude. There's too many songs. It's just too many. I can't keep up. There are other programs. I think almost any program would have trouble with that. I don't think anybody designs these programs to have enough memory or to use enough. You don't even have enough RAM, probably. I don't know. The program would have to be specially designed to handle that many songs, in my opinion. There is a great program for Windows called Media Monkey that is iTunes compatible that does seem to do a better job with really large directories. You don't have to do anything, just using Media Monkey and importing all your songs, which probably take a day or two, and see what Media Monkey does. Very important, otherwise you'll get duplicates. Not to say, you know, do not copy the files, do not move the files, just create a reference library that points to the files as they are now, because you don't want to double 14 terabytes worth of music. I bet it's 1.4 terabytes. I bet you that's what it is. Even then, it's an awful lot. Even then, it may be too much for iTunes to handle. Julian is in Los Angeles listening to the great KFIR Mothership. Hello, Julian. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
How's it going today?
It's fantastic. Welcome.
That's an incredible amount of music.
I think he probably just called a show off.
Yeah, maybe so.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of showing, I wanted to share something with you and your listeners. Actually, last year, I shared this when we kicked it off. So now we're in our second version of it, the second annual Best in Tech 2010 conference.
Oh, how fun. Now, where is that going to be, in L.A.?
It's going to be in L.A. At the Culver City Radisson Hotel. We've got a website if you want to take a look. It's www.bestintech.info. And there we've got all kinds of information about it, the online registration, how to get there, things that are around there, links to the transit providers to get you there. We put a lot of work.
Whose idea? Oh, this is the National Federation of the Blind. So this is particularly for people who have low or no vision.
So specifically for them. And also, we also have a lot of people who work in education and supportive services that come to this event. The main purpose of it is you can come and hear from people like me who use this technology on a daily basis, and we do presentations on various solutions, and we talk about how we use it, how it works, how it doesn't work.
This is great, Julian. This is so great, Julian. I'm glad we could give you a plug for this. Bestintech.info. If you're blind or partially sighted, or you know someone who is, or you work with assistive technologies and would like to connect with people who are using your assistive technologies, this sounds fantastic.
Yeah, it's awesome. I love doing it. It's just great to go in there and talk tech with all these other people and help out.
Well, I'm glad we could give you a little plug. That's fantastic.
And then I had
let me just say one more thing. Coming up Saturday, November 6th. 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Radisson Culver City.
Yes.
And I hear your doorbell. Meet George Jetson.
Yeah, that's my message alert.
I love it. Okay, now what can I do for you?
Okay, now I had a question about iDevices. I was trying to exchange files via Bluetooth, as I've been quite used to doing with my open, unlocked Nokia phones. Mm-hmm. Tried to send somebody a sound file. In fact, that very tone you heard, somebody wanted to use it as their message tone. So I tried to send. Yeah. Well, I could see their iPhone, but when I tried to send it, it would say sending failed. And we tried pairing it. We tried doing everything we could possibly come up with, and it just didn't seem like it was possible to share.
I got a program. Well, yeah, it isn't, because the iPhone doesn't really give you access to the file system. So Bluetooth file transfer, where is it going to go? You can't get. There's nowhere to save it.
Huh.
So there is a program that you can use iPhone to iPhone, or even Android to iPhone, or Android to Android, called Bump, that will allow you to transfer files.
Oh, I see.
And that does it over Wi-Fi, not over Bluetooth.
Oh, so there is no way to really do this via Bluetooth.
Not that I know of, unless you jailbreak it.
Yeah, one more reason for that, huh?
Yeah, thank you, Julian. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Tech Guy Show is brought to you. Whoops, not yet. This portion, now I can do it. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by my internet service provider, DSL Extreme, for high-speed internet at an amazingly low price. Call 866-2-GET-NET to get DSL Extreme. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Chris Marquardt, the Photo Guy. And we have a photo assignment to review. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. Haven't talked to you in ages. Chris is the podcaster who creates the incredible Tips from the Top Floor podcast. You can find out more about him at chrismarquardt.com. And has it been a month already?
Yeah, I think so. I've been so busy doing workshops and traveling. And but now the workshop season is over and I can come back and be here more often if you let me.
I love having you on. Are you kidding? No problem with that. And today we're going to take a look at our assignment, which was, if you'll remind me.
It was heat, no flame.
Heat, no flame.
You know how we do these, we call them iron photographers. It's a bit like an iron chef. You get some ingredients, and this time it was heat and no flame. And I've chosen three images to review, and then I'm going to give you a new assignment.
So we should explain how this works, the way it works. It's not a contest. It's not a competition. It is merely
a chance.
There's
nothing to win.
There's nothing to win. It's just a chance for you to have some fun and really take more pictures. And so what we do is once a month we give you an assignment like take a picture showing in some way the concept of heat, but no flames allowed. And then once you take the picture, you go to Flickr, FLICKR.com. It's free to join. And if you have a Yahoo account, you already have a Flickr account because they're part of Yahoo. And join the Tech Guy group, also free to join within Flickr. And then upload your photo. Tag it with heat so we know. Orbit Gal is our moderator there. She'll say thank you for your submission. And once a week, you can add another picture. And then once a month, Chris will look at all the submissions and pick three to talk about. It's kind of strange because I know you're talking about pictures on the radio, but Chris is very good at describing these images.
I do that all the time on the podcast.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Let's just dive right into it. The first one is called Geothermal Heating. It's by Nelspin. And
this is something. He must have been somewhere near a volcano to get this.
And I didn't even think of it. I mean, I love when the participants kind of think outside the box. And this one is clearly one of those. There's certainly a lot of heat. It's a hot spring of some sort somewhere in the desert.
I'm not
sure. Oh, Yellowstone. Oh, it says Yellowstone.
Oh, yeah.
Actually.
Well, that's where Old Faithful, the geyser is. So this is probably a little baby geyser.
So this one, yeah, it shows heat, no flame. And actually what he did is he uses the opposite of flame. I love the way he composed this because he's deliberately not showing everything. He's deliberately leaving stuff out, which you as a viewer get to do some work when you watch the picture. You get to complete it. You get to add your own bit of the story to it. So pretty cool. The colors, pretty nice color contrast between the bluish water and the yellowish ground around it, especially in the background. So you have this primary color contrast, blue and yellow, which always tends to work really well. So the subdued colors, but still some color contrast there.
Nice
the
composition,
frozen.
Too. He's not centered on the boiling water. It's
totally
it's,
not.
Yeah.
And it's frozen. The water's frozen, but not from a temperature point, but from a timing point of view, because he chose a very short shutter speed. So the whole picture it looks like it's frozen right in mid motion, which is really nice.
It looks like nature's jacuzzi. Somebody said in the chat room.
Yeah,
you know, you with water, you can go either way. You can do a long exposure and get this nice soft, fuzzy water, or you could do a freeze. You know, very quick shutter speed, and the water, the bubbles are actually frozen in the air, and I like that too.
If your camera has a time priority or shutter priority setting, I think on Canon's it's TV mode. On Nikon is the S mode. Play with that. Set it on that mode and then choose a longer shutter speed and deliberately blur some motion. That'll give you some really nice effects.
So that's number one. Let's go to the next one. This is from Welcho, W-E-L-C-H-O.
Yep. And that one is called
hot.
Heat. it's a toaster.
It's a toaster.
I think it could use a bit of brighter exposure, a bit more light. But in general, I really like what he's done there because look at it. Okay. What's he doing? you see the toast coming out of the toaster. It's kind of frozen, but then you see it's being translucent. So it's almost kind of a double exposure. You know, like when you do this with people, you get like ghost people on there.
Mm-hmm. How can he do ghost that? Toast. Would you do it with a long exposure and just have it the toast pop up during the 10-second exposure, something like that?
What he did is he did a long exposure, but he used flash.
I see.
Part of the toaster is exposed before the flash goes off, and then the toast pops up, and then he hits the toast with the flash while it's popping up. So that freezes the toast. So you have this, professionals call it the dragging the shutter, where you have part of the picture normally exposed and part illuminated with a flash, and that's what's happened.
And it really is a double exposure, but with one shot.
It is kind of a double exposure, but it happens within a second or two, maybe.
Yeah.
So if you do something like that in a dark room, most modern DSLRs can, or even point and shoots will do that. Just set it to use the flash, and then the camera will do a long exposure, and then it'll freeze part of the motion. This way you can get some really nice effects. Also by taking pictures of people, for example. A mixture of blur and a sharp part of the picture.
I think you have a fondness for this technique, because you've picked dragging the shutter shots several times now.
Yep. And the third picture... now that is even more extreme, and you obviously can see what that is, even though it's kind of very blurry. It's called Red Hot. It's by Jay Hudo, and it is it's a stove in a kitchen.
It looks like the red elements from an electric stove, but it's kind of blurry. It looks like another either multiple exposure or something like that, right?
Well, it's this one is a long exposure. It's just a long exposure. So what he did is he held the camera. And he deliberately moved it while exposing long. I think he probably took an exposure longer than a second for this. Now,
this ends up being an abstract shot. It really isn't, you don't look at it and say, I know what that is. It's about color and shape and the red
color shape, but the red spiral kind of gives it away. So this one being very, very creative, very abstract will give you at least an idea what it is, and it'll make you work. It'll make your mind start coming up with trying to explain what it's seeing there.
Sometimes a picture doesn't have to be of something. It can be abstract and just be, you like the colors, you like the composition, you like the shapes, right?
And for the next assignment, I actually want to go into this direction. I want to try a bit of a more creative approach.
Okay.
So today I'll give you an iron photographer assignment again, which again is like an iron chef, just with photography. This one's a bit of a special one. I'll give you some ingredients that you have to have in your photo.
Okay.
And then I'll garnish that whole thing with a twist. So there are kind of three ingredients. First is orange.
Which can be
the color or whatever. Second is eyes. Third is no pumpkin.
Because it is Halloween. All right.
These are the three ingredients, orange eyes and no pumpkin. But here's the real twist. You know how a lot of times you shoot your pictures by certain rules. Stuff like hold the camera straight, have your subject in focus,
right?
Expose well.
Right.
All these kind of rules that are somewhere ingrained deep in your mind. And most photographers have those kind of rules. For this assignment, I want everyone who participates to identify the most important rule and throw it overboard.
So for you, the most important rule might be focus, might be horizon.
might be exposure. If you always hold the camera straight, this is the time to skew the image. If you always take painstakingly care to not introduce camera shake, this is the time to start experimenting with the longer shutter speed and deliberately shake the camera.
So we're going to play with the idea of breaking the rules, because sometimes rules are made to be broken.
Yes. So orange eyes, no pumpkin. But find your biggest rule and bend it. That's the most important
thing. The eyes don't have to be orange. It just has to have some eyes in it.
It has to have eyes. It has to have something orange in it. And
it has to have no pumpkin. And it has to have a rule, one of the canon rules of photography, like straight horizon, in focus, properly exposed, or all three if you want. In fact, you've got an example image from your Flickr stream of it looks like it's a museum. And somebody
is
walking.
It is kind of a museum. Someone's walking, and I deliberately took this picture, didn't hold the camera straight, shot it from an unusual perspective.
You're on the
overexposed
floor.
Overexposed it. I'm lying on the floor. Overexposed it. Get it out of focus. But it tells a story, doesn't it?
I take it, yes. And I take it you want to get a photo that still is a good photo.
Well, yes.
But good doesn't have to mean perfectly executed. Good means it tells a story, it captures the eye, it captures the imagination, something like that. It appeals to the aesthetics.
And simply by bending your most important rule, there's a pretty good chance that the picture will do something with the viewer that that your pictures usually don't. So this is a good way to extend your creative toolbox and add some more tools.
It's your chance to be a Monet or a Picasso.
Yes, exactly.
Instead of an Ansel Adams. Chris Marquardt is at chrismarquardt.com. Do listen to his podcast. It's a great show. Tips from the Top Floor. You'll find a link there. And we'll see you at sooner than a month. I think I'm hoping we can see you more often these days now that you have a little more time.
I'll be available every week if you want to.
Great. Thank you, Chris.
Absolutely.
Great to talk to you. Take care. Before we go on, we got a lot of callers on hold. I want to get to Lars in Pasadena next. He wants to know what the best program is for emailing a slideshow. Before we do that, though, I do want to talk about it's Carbonite, right? Carbonite Pro. Now, there's a difference. Now, we've talked about Carbonite before. Carbonite is that great program that you can use to back up your laptop or desktop. Carbonite Pro is designed for small business. So instead of paying by the user, you pay by the amount stored. That's kind of a different model, but that's what businesses want. They don't want to have to pay for each and every person in the business. They just want to say, look, I've got 20 gigs to store. How much is that going to be? And by the way, $20 a month. I mean, Carbonite is amazing. Starts at $10 a month. You only pay for the storage you use, but you get a central dashboard, so you always know everything's backed up. Your users can restore their own files, and best of all, they can do it on any computer as long as they can access the internet. There's even a free iPhone app and a free BlackBerry app. CarbonitePro.com. You can try it free for 30 days. If your small business doesn't have a disaster plan or has an inadequate disaster plan, you're literally risking your business. Don't do that. Just don't do that, please. You put a lot of energy, sweat and tears and blood into this. You want to make sure your business will survive the worst. That's where Carbonite Pro is so great. CarbonitePro.com. Give it a try today. Lars, hang on. Jonathan, too, you're next. We'll get back to the phones. One more segment to go. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, talking high tech at 8888 Ask Leo. The website techguylabs.com. You can go there if you've got a question about anything we talked about on the show. The links will all be there. James DeRuvo's writing that all down as we talk. 8888 Ask Leo's the phone number, and techguylabs.com's the website, and let's get to the phones. And oh, we lost one call, but I still have Jonathan on the line from Torrance, California. Hi, Jonathan. Leo Laporte.
Hey, Leo. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. What can I do for you?
Thank you, sir. Well, we have a heck of a network. Oh, by the way, you know, you and I have met a couple of times, Macworld last year and the year before. I'm the probably only person in the United States who bought a Scotty Vest Twit t-shirt.
You have one of those ugly Leo t-shirts.
That would be the one.
Well, I am grateful, I guess, but you don't really have to wear it. It's okay.
My children, all the way down to my one-year-old grandson, calls you Uncle Leo.
Aw, isn't that sweet? Well, say hi to everybody for me.
Definitely will. Well, here's what we've got. I've got 4 Macs and 3 PCs in the house, plus an iPad, an iPhone, an iPod, a Wii that hits Netflix, an Xbox 360 with Xbox Live. And I just got a new Apple TV. Now.
Holy moly.
Well, you know what? That's a normal tech family.
It is nowadays. You're right. It used to be that you had to be like a hardcore nerd to have something like that. And that's, you know, everybody has that now.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah. I do not yet have an HDTV, believe it or not.
Well, I think that's on the horizon somehow.
You know it is. Well, here's... I have an Airport Extreme 802.11n.
Yeah.
And that is our only internet source. I have dry loop DSL, which from AT&T, and it serves the family all right, but obviously I'm not getting the strongest signal I could possibly get. I mean, the back two rooms of my home are an extension, and I can get the network from the neighbor across the street.
Right.
And get my own.
So airport can be extended. You know, Wi-Fi has this thing called WDS that's in the Wi-Fi spec that allows you to extend a Wi-Fi signal by adding additional base stations that act as repeaters. And so, you know, Wi-Fi even, you know, and maybe it will go a few hundred feet. B and G went about 150 feet. So, but you know, if there's things in between that can impede it, any metal will, even a metal screen, in fact, especially a metal screen will block it. So, you know, walls in the way, if they've got metal in them, that's going to block it and so forth. So you might have to be a little creative. You have to think in terms of a wireless signal getting around those barriers and then getting to a repeater. You've got an Airport Extreme, that's your base unit. And now you're going to buy an Airport Express or two. And each one of those you'll set it up to use WDS. It will expand the network. Instead of being its own base station, it will be a repeater using WDS. It's actually built into the system. In fact, it's part of the settings. You can set it up to when you set up the new Airport Express, you'll see it'll say, "Would you like to use this to extend an existing network?" And you say yes, and you can make it, you know, go all over the house. You can add you know, quite a few of these. I use it to get the airport upstairs into the kids' room. But you have to remember, you have to get that Airport Express kind of midway between where you are and where you want to go. And you really don't want to go, you know, much more than say 100 feet between units. But you'll see. You'll have to experiment. RF is kind of a thing that you would experiment with. So you can have it relay, or you can have it remote. Apple's got a whole explanation how to use the airport admin utility to create a double WDS network with multiple base stations. You can do up to five, says 2 to 5 base stations can be used, Airport Extremes or Expresses, to extend your airport network. Now, as I said, this is part of Wi-Fi, so in theory, you wouldn't have to use Apple products, but in practice, what happens is you do need to use a product that uses the same chipset. It's easier if you use all Apple products. I know they're more expensive. If you have a Linksys router, you probably will want to stick with Linksys products for doing the extension. Netgear, same thing. Not because, there is a standard WDS, but it's such a loosely written spec that everybody implements it slightly differently, so it seems like it's a lot better. Frankly, if you use the same brand, you'll have better results. Will in Upland, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Will.
Yes, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I have a problem getting my older word processing program to work on my new Lenovo computer.
How old is your old word processing program? Is it really old?
Well, it's about 7-8 years old. It's WordPerfect Office 2002.
Okay.
The reason I want to use it on my new laptop is because I have a lot of files in that word processing program, and I can't access them now on my new laptop.
Yeah, well, you could go to Corel and get an updated. What happens when you install WordPerfect on your new laptop? Is it Windows 7?
Yes, it's Windows 7.
And does it say I won't run?
And then when I open a document, it gives me nothing but a bunch of garbage. It's letters and numbers and signs and symbols. It doesn't make sense.
So even though you created the document with the same program,
yes,
if you try to open it with that program, the documents are corrupted.
Exactly.
All right. Well, Dan, who is our chat room moderator and does a lot of support and apparently does some support for WordPerfect, says there are patches you can get from Corel to possibly solve that problem.
All right. How do I get
So just go to Corel.com and download the updates for that version of WordPerfect.
Okay, Corel.
Yeah, that's who made it. I'm wondering if it's because that version doesn't work so well on Windows 7. You may need to update. But the other thing is there are other programs like OpenOffice, which is a free program, openoffice.org, that probably will read those WordPerfect files. So you don't need to buy the newest Corel Office, if what you want to do is open those files, just get OpenOffice, OpenOffice.org. Should be able to open it. WordPerfect was such a common file format that almost everybody can open it. Hey, thanks for the call, Will. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Hope you have a great Geek Week. We'll see you right here next week. Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy.